Harris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker touchdown.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
So it's been a while since you and I got together, Mike, and there was a bit of a controversy that brewed over on Twitter thanks to a Toronto shock jock DJ. Why don't you fill everyone in on kind of that lunacy?
Well, Dean Blundell, formerly of The Edge, 102.1 The Edge. I think he's known for his controversial ways, kind of his toilet humor, I guess you could say. He is now on The Fan doing the morning show and released some kind of poll on Twitter about, you know, if you were confined or, you know, kidnapped and had to watch the MLS or the CFL, which one would you choose? That kind of riled up CFL fans. I'm not sure if it got the MLS crowd as up in arms, but that's pretty much the gist of it. And then I believe he continued to, you know, really go after the CFL on his radio show, you know, demeaning it and all that sorts of stuff, saying, you know, an NCAA team could easily beat a CFL team and on and on. So that's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah, it's just typical big time, and I hate to lump Toronto in this, but it seems to be this Toronto mentality of CFL hate. At this point, I don't pay this any mind. Like, whatever. You want to have this one jackass has an opinion. There are millions of people in this country who love the CFL. What sort of currency do you get in the online community by bashing the Canadian Football League? Like, is that still cool to do? I thought that was kind of passe. I think haven't we gone past that as a form of like entertainment? Like, let's diss the CFL.
I don't think it's passe. I think that, you know, I remember, I think it was Tim and Sid, the day after the Grey Cup, they had a poll up, did you watch the Grey Cup? And, you know, I read the comments on Twitter and it was just like, you know, all these people, what's the CFL? You know, why would I watch that crap? So, you know, there's a big segment of people out there that love to bash on it. And for some reason, I don't know why, you know, it's a great sport and I don't see why people have to go after it so much, but it seems to be something cool to do. People think it makes you cool to bash the CFL. I don't know, but it seems to be out there, and it seems to be, you know, if you follow the Rogers guys, then you're more than likely a person that doesn't like the CFL, because it seems that the Sportsnet guys bash the CFL way more than the TSN guys, obviously, because TSN has the rights, but it just seems to be a thing that they like to do over there at Sportsnet.
It's funny, maybe I just insulate myself from it. Maybe I'm just not following Sportsnet people. Like, we had Justin Dunk on this show last time, and he's a Sportsnet guy, but he's clearly, like, he works for the CFL, he works for us at 3 Nation. Like, obviously it's not a guarantee that you work for Rogers and therefore you bash the CFL, but I have heard this, and obviously seen this complaint before. There are certain employees of Rogers who do seem to love to get digs in at the league, even though they kind of cover it. I think we know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
It seems like he has this one person has an affinity for the league, but at the same time takes his opportunities to talk down. It's a kind of a very strange way of kind of living your life. It's almost like you're making money off something that you hate, which I find to be very weird. It's like hate watching a television show. Like, oh, I can't stand the Kardashians, but I can't stop watching them. I don't understand that. It seems like a waste of time to me, don't you think?
Yeah, it seems strange, I guess. There are guys at Sportsnet that do enjoy the CFL, just like you said, Justin Dunk, and then I can name a couple more that, you know, you see tweet out and they have respect for the league. But I don't know, it just seems that a lot of the radio guys in Toronto on The Fan seem to like to bash it a lot. But, you know, it is what it is. Not everybody's going to like the CFL, and Rogers is a, you know, competing company against TSN and the CFL, and they want to be number one in the country for sports programming. So I guess they don't seem to like to take the high road. They seem to try to demean the CFL a lot and try to get their other products out there. I mean, their products out there as much as possible while kicking the CFL.
And it's funny because they have a stake in the CIS, and one of our biggest complaints about CIS coverage is that they have the rights to it and never show it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it just seems kind of insane that they would want to spend the money on this property and then kind of just shelve it for 99% of the season. But I don't know. I'm not in the Rogers community. I'm not a part of that. I guess I just don't understand that mentality. I don't know. Just this whole thing just kind of seems so stupid to me, because it goes back to what we were talking about last week or last time, when people were bashing people for watching wrestling or this, that, and the other. And it just seems like everyone seems to tell everyone else what they should do with their time. And it's like, if you like the CFL, watch the CFL. You and I love this game. That's why we're sitting here talking about it. So we watch it. If I'm not a huge hockey fan anymore, I don't watch the NHL playoffs. I pay attention because that's just what I do, but I'm not going out saying the hockey's crap, or like, I don't even really watch MLS, and I don't say that it's garbage, because there are people out there that like it. Like what you like is essentially what I'm trying to say. And if you feel the need that you have to bash something in order to make something else better, or to get yourself some notoriety, or to get your name in the news, it just come up with something better. It's just tiresome. It's tiresome and annoying.
Yeah, I think it was just an attention grabber for Dean Blundell to put this poll out there, and it attracted some attention for sure. So, like Drew Edwards said, like he wrote in the Three Down Nation piece, don't feed the trolls, basically. So it was just, he put it out there and it got a lot of attention. So I guess he accomplished what he was looking for.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, he won. You mentioned attention grabber. Dean Blundell wasn't the only one that grabbed some headlines since we last sat down. Please tell me that you saw Peter Diakowski's study on CFL fandom.
I did.
How great was that? I knew from the very start that this had to be tongue-in-cheek, that this had to be a joke. And then he just kept going with it, and he was on a radio show out in Saskatchewan. It seemed that it really pissed off Rider fans, which should come as no great surprise. The gist of it is that Peter Diakowski and Professor John Miller, I'm using air quotes here, a mathematician and a statistician from McMaster University, came up with this study and apparently proved that we, as Ticat fans, are the number one fan base in the CFL, which I think we have to somehow figure into the opening of the show. Maybe when we introduce ourselves, we'll introduce ourselves as the co-hosts of the podcast for the number one fans. We'll come up with something, because this to me was just so great. So the Ticats finished first in this study, and then to much to the dismay of Rider Nation, who finished third behind the Ticats, and maybe more hilarious, the Blue Bombers were number two. And Peter has taken this and he's run with it, and you can look on his timeline now, he's still talking about it. Rider fans are still ticked about this. He has maintained that this is real, but if you go listen to the interview he did on a Saskatchewan radio show, it's very clear that it's Peter doing it. I got a massive kick out of this, and just to see how all the Rider fans, including a bunch of members of their media, most notably Rod Peterson, got so up in arms about this, it just made me laugh. Anytime you control Rider Nation, I'm all for it.
Yeah, there seemed to be a lot of fight back from them, but there was a lot of them that took it and thought it was funny, and then there was a lot of them that fought back saying this is ridiculous. But the whole thing was just hilarious. I listened to the interview, and right off the bat you can tell it's him. Like, if you know his voice, you could tell it's him. And he just kind of rambles on and on about it. He doesn't really say anything in the interview. He just kind of keeps talking and talking. But it was just a brilliant move by him, and something interesting, and just showing that he has such a personality, and he's just such a funny guy that I just love this. It's hilarious.
Yeah, my favorite part, I think, of the entire interview that he did was when he mentioned that they did decibel studies at stadia across the league in 2015, and that the Rough Riders finished really low. And then the host of the radio program gets so angry. He's like, well, we sucked in 2015. And John Miller, again, air quotes, was like, well, there's nothing we can do about that. We can't just go and change our criteria based on, it was just so ridiculous. And the fact that a major media outlet in Regina fell for this doesn't really speak very highly of them, but I guess controversy and the desire to get people to listen to your show and stuff like that, this was a hot topic for a couple of days in CFL circles, and especially in Regina, that I guess it's one of those things where you have a little bit of egg on your face, but I think at the end of the day, it was tongue-in-cheek. It was meant to be fun. It was meant to kind of rile everyone up. And maybe it was meant to have the Tie Cats pound, you know, fans tie, pound their chest in pride. And it was all sorts of kind of fun, and I wish that we would have more of this.
Yeah, for sure. It's good for the league. It's a funny thing. And yeah, I guess that the Saskatchewan Radio didn't really double check who they were bringing on, because it was obviously a knee-jerk reaction just to like get this guy on as quick as possible. And they got Mr. John Miller. So yeah, it's a funny thing that they fell for it, but they shouldn't feel too bad because it was just a funny joke.
Yeah, you have this. You have Brian Hall just relentlessly trolling Ticat fans. These are the types of guys that the league needs to promote more, these guys with personality. And I think if you put these guys front and center, how Brian Hall is not becoming the face of the Toronto Argonauts on a PR media level, to me, is astounding. That guy is a quote waiting to happen. He's been doing more to build up to the season opener than the Argos have done to build up to seasons in total over the past decade. Like these guys, they engage with fans. Yeah, as a Ticat fan, you see some of the stuff that Hall's saying. And for if you take it too seriously, you get angry. And I've seen a lot of Ticat fans rip into Brian Hall. But what he's doing is he's creating this idea that like it's just I'm kind of at a loss for words of what, you know what I mean, like he's creating hype and he's creating buzz for this Argos team and this rival with the Ticats, and I'm all for it. I'm all for these guys getting out there and promoting this league and getting more eyeballs on it with fun little stunts like this.
And it just makes the games more exciting, you know, leading up to it. You know, you just have that feeling like, oh, I can't wait to watch this game because the rivalry and all the high intensity that's going to be in the game and high emotions. So yeah, he's doing a great thing for the league. He's doing a great thing for the Ticats and the Argos with that rivalry, even though it's, you know, it's one of the best in the league, if not the best. He's just adding to it, and it's a great thing. You know, you said before, all these personalities are a good thing for the league. The CFL is supposed to be fun. There's supposed to be lots of personalities. Like back in the early 2000s and the 90s, there seemed to be a lot more big personalities, and I'm glad to see some of the big personalities really shining through, you know, on social media and all that stuff. And I don't know why Brian Hall hasn't been, maybe he will be interviewed on some of the major Toronto radio stations before the season starts, but you know, it'd be a great thing for them and for the Argos if that they can make that happen, to really get his personality out there on the airwaves.
Well, you mentioned fun, and that's what this is all about. That's what sports is. It's entertainment. It's meant to be fun. People, and you and I are both guilty of this, sometimes take this a little too seriously, but at the end of the day, it's meant to entertain. And guys like Brian Hall getting at it with Ticat fans, Peter Dykowski coming up with these fan studies, like it's fun, and the less serious I think we take ourselves in regards to sports, I think the more fun the game can be.
Absolutely. And you know, it's fun to take it seriously as well, but you know, you just gotta, you know, with the Brian Hall stuff, I know that some of that stuff isn't serious, but he's just trying to build up this rivalry. He wants to be hated by Ticat fans, and I think that's fun.
He said that, I think we even talked with this, he said that, like, I don't want to be liked by you guys. Like, I'm going to – the Ticats on Labor Day are doing this doubleheader at noon, I think it is. We have Mac taking on U of T in the CIS opener. And as a U of T grad, I'm going to go. Tickets are like $15. It's – you know what? I'm going to have an entire day watching football, so I'm not going to pass that up. I know the Blues are going to get smoked by the Marauders. McMaster's just that good of a football team, where Toronto's not there yet. They're getting better, but they're not that great. So I know that my team's going to get pounded. But I'm going to be there pretty early, so I expect that I'm going to be in the stands as guys take the field. And you know Brian Hall is going to be walking out there doing his thing. We saw it last year. He's shirtless in Montreal. He's shirtless in Ottawa, dancing around, doing all this stuff. You know he's going to do that, especially when they come into town on Labor Day. With that stadium, with not a lot of people there, you can really hear the players on the field, and I'm sure some of those fans that sit behind that bench are going to get there early, and they're going to give it to Hall, and Hall's going to give it back, and it's going to be goddamn entertaining.
Yeah, it's just going to, you know, make you more hype for the game. Like, how could you get more hype for the Labor Day game? But it's just going to add to it, and you know, to have him on the Argos is a good thing. You know, you got the big personalities. You know, to get them out there in the Toronto scene and show them that these guys are fun. I saw recently that the Argos were out there, you know, they're really trying to push the brand, you know, it's different ownership, it's a different thing, this year, and if they, the more personalities on the Argos, the better.
Well, and getting people in the city to know who these players are, getting that personal connection, creates fans. It's that personal. As much as we look at it as a business, and as much as we look at it as, you know, we see guys leave and new guys come in and we fall in love with them and we forget about the old guys, connecting the fan base to these players is probably the best way to get butts in seats. If guys and girls and children of all ages have a personal connection with a player, I think they're going to feel more like they want to get to the game and they want to cheer for guys. I think what the Argos have done in the last couple of weeks, we saw some ads during the Raptors-Cavs game this past weekend. Like you said, they were out in the city at local pubs, buying beers, having shots, you know, talking. I think the more we see this, I think we're getting to that point where the Argos just may find themselves a foothold in that city. And as much as I want to see them fail miserably on the field, I do want to see them succeed exponentially off it. So the more of this stuff, the better. And thumbs up to the Argos for finally getting in on this act and getting their players out there. Brian Hall wasn't one of them, but maybe that's just because he's not in town. But as soon as he is, he's got to be the guy that you put front and center. He's got to be in the marketing material. He's got to be in the promos. He's got to be – that's the guy that you need to market around, because fans will fall in love with that guy. And if he ever decides to leave, they're going to hate him and they're going to want to come back and watch him get beat. He's almost like a great professional wrestler in the way that he's a hero when he's with one team, and then he turns heel and now he's the hated enemy. I think he just gets it. I think that's the be all and end all. He just understands what it means to engage the fans in a way that is entertaining and will bring butts into seats, and that's it's just great all the way around.
Yeah, it's just, I think I've said it before, but it's tougher to hate on a team when you think that they're on the brink of folding or whatnot because of the, you know, going to a stadium and there's not many people there. But this year, if the Argos can turn around and they're, you know, you go to the stadium and it's packed full of Argos fans, then it's just easier to hate them because you don't have any worries about them, you know, becoming extinct. And you don't have to worry about the off-field stuff. You just have to worry about hating them on the field. So it's just, you know, a strong Toronto Argonauts team is better. Obviously great for the league and great for this rivalry.
But you know what? We've talked more than enough about the Argos. We fluffed them a lot this offseason. People are
going to start fluffing them.
People are going to get on us about this. So let's just, enough with the Argos stuff. Let's get into a little bit of Ticats news before we get into the big stuff. They've signed a pair of kickers. And it looks like the camp battle is going to be between former Alabama Crimson Tide kicker Cody Mandel and former Ottawa Red Black kicker Brett Maher. Any thoughts on the signing of these two gentlemen?
Well, Maher, you know, it's tough to say. I can't even really remember if he was any good when he was in Ottawa or if he was bad or he was terrible or...
I got some numbers for you if you want.
Okay, yeah, throw them out there.
He's 25 for 37, which is 67.6%. He's just 3 of 10 from beyond 40 and 0 for 2 from beyond 50. So those numbers are don't exactly inspire a lot of confidence.
Yamahama. Yeah, that's not very good. That's not very good at all. So you got to hope that this kid from Alabama is a hidden gem because Maher, you know, kickers can turn around, maybe a change of scenery. You know, I think that what's-his-face from Winnipeg had a bad year last year, but had a really good rookie season. He's with Toronto now.
Liram Hirolahu.
Yes, Hirolahu. You know, I think that he could really bounce back from a change in scenery, but I don't know, man. Those numbers are pretty brutal, so we're going to have to see what this Mandel kid can do, and maybe he really outshines Maher and takes the starting job. I don't know if he's a dual role kicker, if he can do all the positions, but we're gonna find out. And we might have a pretty weak position at kicker this year if Mandel isn't the guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of obviously losing Medlock hurt, especially when it comes to accuracy and distance. I don't think there was anyone they could have brought in, with the exception of Swayze Waters, who signed with the Carolina Panthers, that could have even come close to replicating what Medlock did here over his two stints with the Ticats. But these guys, Mandel is an unknown commodity. Kicked at Alabama, so they're NCAA powerhouse and all that sorts of stuff. So I can't imagine he is a terrible kicker. But Maher, everyone will remember his his big game where I believe he scored the only points in Ottawa's first ever victory when they back in 2014. But
yeah, against Toronto.
Against Toronto. It's been really up and down for him. He missed all of last season because of an injury. I think he came back late in the year, did some punting for them at the end, but then was cut again. Yeah, it's not exactly the ideal situation going into camp and going into the preseason with these two guys, but you never know. Maybe Maher, like you said, change of scenery. He can step it up and become a clutch, accurate, long-distance field goal kicker. And we're going to have to see what we have in this Mandel kid. They clearly liked him. These guys were of a bunch that were invited about a month and a half ago to Hamilton to practice kicking and to be worked out. So these seem to be the two guys that they've settled on. And unless there's another kicker who's escaping me, these were the only ones that kind of shot out to me. So I guess we'll see where we're headed. But yeah, kicking is going to be is going to be a little more of a harrowing experience this year, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's such a big deal, the kicking game in the CFL compared to other leagues. So yes, we lost Medlock, and he was asking for a lot of money, and he got a lot of money. And I'm not saying that the team should have paid him the whatever it was, 175K, I believe. But it's gonna be tough, watching field goal kicks this year, because you were so assured that the kicks would go through every time that Medlock stepped up to the tee. So it's gonna be quite the adventure this year, I think.
Well, a Medlock miss was met with more surprise than a Medlock make. He hit a 50-something yard field goal against the Argos in the East semifinal last year, and then last year went in to win the game. He's trotting out there for a 40-something yard field goal. I don't think there was a single person in that stadium that didn't think that the game was over. The Ticats won. Like, there was just, you knew he was going to go out there, you knew he was going to make that kick, and you knew the Ticats were going on to play Ottawa. It was just that simple, and that's exactly what happened. We're not going to have that comfort this year, and yeah, it's going to be a little difficult, but hey, you know what? Justin Medlock, he's somewhere else, and one of these two guys are going to be the guy, and we kind of got to get behind it. I'm curious, I think, more with Mandel, because he's such an unknown commodity, that I'd really like to see what he can sort of bring, if he's going to be, maybe he's this diamond in the rough that becomes Medlock-like during the season.
Yeah, we can only hope. This brings stability back to the kicking game would be a big help to this team.
So let's get into the CFL draft. Since the last time we sat down, we did a draft preview, and thanks once again to Justin Dunk for helping us along there. And then the draft happened. So the Ticats drafted eight players. We're going to start with them, then we'll get into the rest of the league. They traded up in the first round to grab Grand Valley State offensive lineman Brandon Revenberg. Then in the second round, they grabbed running back from Calgary, Mercer Timmis. Local product, Burlington kid. His great-grandfather's name was on the field adjacent to Iverwind Stadium for all those years. Brian Timmis Stadium. He's from that family. Then they grabbed Southern wide receiver Mike Jones. Then it was UBC linebacker Terrell Davis. Laval wide receiver Felix Faubert-Lucier. Missouri Western defensive back Elroy Douglas. UBC defensive back / linebacker Mitchell Barnett. And their final pick of the draft was Western wide receiver Matt Urin. So what is your overall take, Mike, about what the Ticats did in this draft? Like, dislike, not sure? What do you got there?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. The first round pick, I was, I was watching the draft live, and I heard that they traded up, and I was kind of curious to see who they were going to grab. I thought maybe one of the offensive linemen from the Rouge Or, or maybe another name that we were seeing on draft boards, mock drafts and all that stuff. But with Revenberg, I haven't even heard of that name. I didn't see it on anyone's mock draft or anything like that. But if Austin and his team really like this guy, then I have confidence that he'll be good. He seems to be a smaller offensive lineman, 6'4". Not height wise, but in weight, 285 pounds. I guess I think I listened to the Austin interviews after the draft, and he was saying that he's an athletic offensive lineman, kind of in the vein of Ryan Bomben. So, they must really like this guy if they were going to trade up to get him. So even though I don't know him, just like I don't know a lot of the guys in this draft, I have full confidence in Austin and his team that they like him so much, then he must be a pretty good pick. So I was, surprised at first, but now I think that it could be a good thing going down the road.
My understanding with him is that he was someone who was severely undersized prior to the whole like draft process, and then he bulked up and was flying off draft boards. He wasn't ranked in that scouting bureau top 20, but that thing to me is an inexact board. I think we talked about this before. You're not going to see GMs tip their hand too much. Like apparently, and I'm every team says this, but Revenberg was the top guy on the Ticats board. Now every team that drafts a player in the first round says we got the guy that was the top guy on our board. So you take that with a grain of salt. But if it's true, he probably wasn't. They probably weren't the only team that Revenberg had flown up there. It's an interesting pick. Again, like you said, he wasn't a well-known prospect, but I think in the days leading up to the draft, he was becoming a little bit more of a hot commodity. To me, and I think I said this when we had Justin on the show, I'm a wide receivers whore, and the Ticats nabbed three of them. Mike Jones, to me, this was a guy, and I watched a lot of the combine stuff and paid more attention to get myself more educated this year. He was someone that teams were really high on. Very fast, very quick. I know those are basically the same thing, but that's what people say. Quickness and speed are apparently two different things. I didn't know that. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. And Mercer Timmis, I think, is just a great story. I think there's talks that he worked out as a slot back with teams, Hamilton being one of those teams. And you look at him as a running back / slot back, could he be maybe the next Andre Dury? If the Ticats can get a guy like that, that they can line up in the slot, but also bring in to run the ball in situations and keep defenses off guard, I think that could end up being one of the best picks of the draft by any team.
Yeah, you stole the words out of my mouth. I was thinking when I was talking about Timmis, that he could be a Andre Dury type of guy, a pinball type of guy, comes out of the backfield, but also a running back. You'd use him in the slot back. So, yeah, like you said, he was a great story, his grandfather, all that stuff. Hopefully he can be a productive guy for the Ticats and really, I guess he had tryouts with the Panthers or something like that. But I don't think that, no offense to him, and, I hope he does well and I hope he gets signed by the Panthers or whatever, but I think he'll be back with the Ticats. I don't think he'll stick down south. And you talked about Mike Jones. I looked up some of his highlight films from Southern University. And, you're not going to see any bad things on a guy's highlight film. But, what I saw really impressed me. I think he's a good route runner. I think he's, like you said, a fast guy. He has really good speed. There was a couple nice blocks on that highlight film I saw. So, he puts in the extra effort, even when he doesn't have the ball. So, yeah, I like this pick. I think that he could be potentially a starter down the road. And I'm looking forward to see what he can do because he has a lot of blazing speed and can do a lot of good things on this big field, I think.
Yeah, and I think outside of those top three, I think the rest of the guys we saw drafted are really going to make their hay on special teams, which is really important. The Ticats lost a few special teams guys. Arnaud Gascon-Nadon left. They did re-sign Frederic Plessis, who for my money is one of the best special teams players in the league. But they drafted a couple linebackers. They drafted a couple receivers, a DB. So this looks to me like this is the makings of here are going to be the guys that we're going to hope that'll contribute on special teams. And maybe down the line could be someone who gets in on a defensive package or gets in on an offensive player too. But I think these bottom five guys are going to be, I think the top three are your guys that you're looking at being like offensive players. And even Timmis will probably, they'll probably all at some point play on specials because that's just what you do. But I see a lot of special teams depth, and we know that the Ticats like to build special teams depth, especially after last season where they drafted 947 linebackers with seven picks. So it's not exactly a bad thing to have young, cheap Canadians playing special teams that can excel.
Yeah, only 940 linebackers this year.
Yeah. Well, what did you
in actuality, only two, after the first three picks, they're usually just special teams guys. So, but the special teams is a huge part of the CFL game, so they're a very important very important pieces to plug in there in the special teams. And we've had great special teams for, ever since Jeff Reinbold has been there. So these guys are a big, important part of the team, even though they don't get the headlines that the starting offense or defensive players get.
So there was a little bit of controversy with the Ticats did. They traded up to get Revenberg. They moved around the draft board a lot, swapping picks, mostly with the BC Lions. You saw some complaints about that. Fans didn't really like the fact that the Ticats would come up and draft a guy who wasn't on the top 20 board, stuff like that. How do you feel about the way the Ticats seem to try to manipulate the draft to not worry about overspending on a guy, that just instead going and getting the guy they want? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, there's going to be different opinions out there. A lot of those top 20 lists are guys, you know, not all of them, like maybe a select few are guys that, you know, number one would be Onyemata. And, he, you know, you're never going to see him in the CFL. Well, you might see him later down the road, but not for a while. So, you know, I think that if these guys, the scouts and Austin and his team evaluate the players and these are the guys that they really wanted, then I have trust in them. You know, people are going to have different opinions at who's the best players. The different teams are going to have different opinions who are the best players. Like you said earlier, you know, everyone says, oh, we had him number one on our draft board. Well, there seems to be a lot of differing opinions between the teams. So, you know, you can take the top 20 lists with a grain of salt because there's going to be different opinions on different guys. So I'm happy with what the Ticats did because I put full trust in them that they see the talent in front of them and can evaluate it. We've seen it over the years with Austin. He's a great talent evaluator. So, yeah, I have full confidence in them.
Well, I look at it this way, and we're mostly talking about Revenberg here because that was the big trade. They moved up from 5 to 3 to select this kid, traded a couple picks back in the later round to BC, then ended up swapping that pick back to BC to get further up in round 3 to draft Terrell Davis. So they moved around the board a little bit, and very Belichickian, if you follow the NFL. Belichick likes to manipulate the draft board, and the Patriots have been a very successful franchise, much to my chagrin, for the last decade and a half. But in speaking of Revenberg, what I think this shows, and I think this is very important, is they basically told this kid, you're our guy. You're the guy we wanted. We moved heaven and earth to get you, and I think come contract renewal time, that will mean a lot to this guy because he'll look and go, they really wanted me here. And if he, you know, starts to turn into a star player or one of those great Canadian interior offensive linemen, I think he's more likely to stay because the team invested something more than just simply a draft pick. They made a move to go get him. And I think that that cannot be valued any higher or than say, an extra draft pick here or there. I think that means something to the kid. And I think it could mean something come contract renewal time.
Yeah, hopefully we can lock down this kid if he's the real deal. For a long time, I like when teams draft the offensive linemen in the with their first picks. I know it's not the sexy picks. I know they're not wide receivers or running backs or, you know, talent position guys. But I just think that it's so important to get as many talented Canadian offensive linemen on your team as possible. So yeah, if they see this guy as an athletic, lots of potential off. You know, guy that's going to be on the offensive line for years to come, then I'm overjoyed with that pick.
Well, and you look at it as, and I hate to say this, but perhaps we're looking at maybe the end of Peter Diakowski's run here. He's been in the league now almost 10 years. That's a long time to be playing offensive line. He's getting up there. He's not old by any stretch of the imagination, but you always got to have guys in the pipeline ready to replace. That's how Montreal stayed good for so many years. Look at Calgary out west, and they're always drafting offensive linemen. They had Brett Jones, who was the rookie of the year, and then the offensive lineman of the year. They lost him to the NFL. Plug and play, Pierre Laviolette's right there. You need – the solider your offensive line is, and I don't even think solider is a word, but the more solid your offensive line is with Canadian talent, I think the better your team is because then you can move the ratio around. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not behooving to just, oh, okay, we have these guys here, and if one guy gets hurt, we're screwed. The more Canadian talent, period, but especially the talent you have on the offensive line, the better.
Yeah, we've been seeing that. You know, they didn't really, I don't think they drafted offensive lineman last year, but they bring in this Revenberg kid. You know, they get Simmons back because they had injuries on the offensive line last year. So they're bringing in guys that have, you know, they can add to the depth of that O-line. So if people go down, they can, you know, plug and play and, you know, hopefully not miss a beat. So, like you said, it's a lot of depth on the offensive line. You mentioned Montreal. You know, they've been playing with 5 Canadian offensive linemen for years and years. So, and it's worked out great for them, you know, not necessarily in the recent past, but, you know, you can't blame your struggles on the offensive line, really. So, yeah, it's a great strategy to have as many great Canadian offensive linemen as possible.
So what do you think about what the rest of the teams did in the draft? Any thoughts on whose drafts you liked and who you didn't like?
Well, I thought that the Eskimos drafting was interesting, to say the least. You know, they go with a couple future guys that I think their first 2 picks were guys that signed contracts in the NFL already. So, you know, it's a big risk and reward type thing. If those guys, you know, don't make the NFL, they have, and they come back to the Eskimos, then, it, you know, they'll look brilliant. But if they don't see those guys for years and years or ever, then they might get into a bit of trouble, because, you know, these first couple draft picks are really important to building your team. So if they never see those guys, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, the Eskimos drafted like only the defending champions can. They can take risks like this because they're coming off a Grey Cup win. Fans will be a little more patient with them if they struggle, if you know what I mean. Like they went into this draft looking to nail, get some quality guys that maybe you won't see for a year or two. And, you know, like you said, perhaps maybe never. But if it does work out and one or both of these guys do come up, it's a huge boon to this team. I really liked what Winnipeg and BC did. Personally, I thought they had very solid drafts. BC, again, was dealing with the Ticats. They moved around. They still got offensive linemen. Like, I think that I hate to proclaim winners and losers of drafts simply because we're not going to know for 3 or 4 years whether these draft picks work out. Everyone looks great coming into the league. More often than not, a lot of these guys don't make it and don't become the stars that we suspect they are. But Winnipeg went out and grabbed, especially with those first two picks, they nailed the defensive lineman, who they now have someone to back up Westerman. They got another Canadian offensive lineman. They came back and got a really good Canadian defensive back / linebacker in Taylor Loeffler, who can maybe team up with last year's supplemental draft pick, Garrett Wagner. And BC did what BC does. They went out and they grabbed some offensive linemen. I think both those teams had really good drafts.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Calgary always seems to have really good drafts. So this could be another year where Calgary comes out on top, because, you know, they in the first round they drafted Singleton, and that's the guy that we talked about on past shows, that, you know, got his Canadian status and seemed to be a really talented player. And, you know, I remember Calgary had a really good draft last year, so I expect them to keep doing what they're doing and keep pulling in guys that have tremendous amounts of talent and will be on their team for years to come.
Yeah, I really like what Calgary did as well. The Singleton pick especially, that guy could be the star of the draft. Like, he could be the one guy who becomes like the player, you know what I mean? Like, he's playing a position that gets a little more flash than the offensive line, but he's not quite a receiver, but he could be a starter at linebacker. I think Calgary hit a home run with that pick. The one confusing thing about this draft, though, was what the hell was Saskatchewan doing? Like, they take David Onyemata, they took Buca. Both those guys are signed. Like, Onyemata might never play in the CFL. I'd be surprised if he ever stepped foot in the CFL. He was a draft pick playing down south. Like, I don't ever see him coming up here. And even if he does come up here, it's not going to be for maybe 4 or 5 years. Who knows how motive, you know what I anyway. And then they take Buca, another guy. I think he was signed by the Cardinals. So he's someone who they at the earliest they'll see after Labor Day. It just seems like the Riders, we talked about this before, they need Canadian help. And they had the one pick in the first round that they were trying to trade, the first overall pick, because they had no picks in like rounds 2 and 3. And to take a chance on these futures guys, that doesn't seem to me like that's what Saskatchewan should have been doing. They should have been looking at guys that can contribute this year. Now, the biggest question for me with them is they drafted the kicker. And I understand Chris Jones and company weren't there when the trade was made, but they traded Jerome Messam last year for a young kicker, Tyler Crepina from Mac. So now they go and they draft that Van Gilswick guy from UBC. I don't know. Saskatchewan's draft was really kind of strange to me. It's kind of like it's a boom or bust. Like, if you see these guys come in and compete, then they've nailed. Like, if Onyemata ever comes and plays in the CFL and is as dominant as everyone thinks he can be, that's a hell of a pick. But it seems to me a team that finished 3-15 that is sorely lacking in Canadian depth should not have been taking chances on these guys, like drafting futures, drafting a kicker when they weren't necessarily needs.
Yeah, maybe they're thinking that, you know, they brought in some guys in free agency and maybe they're thinking that's enough, but I'm with you. I mean, they should be drafting guys that can contribute right away, or at least guys that can be depth players behind the free agents that they signed in the offseason. So, yeah, they're taking a big risk, just like Edmonton did with some of these picks that, you know, are signed in the NFL and might not see, you know, be in the CFL for a couple years. And in Onyemata's case, probably never. So, yeah, it can go either way. If, like you said, if Onyemata comes to the CFL and dominates, then he'll be looked at as a, you know, a very, it'll be a, looked at as a very smart move by Chris Jones and company. But yeah, they got Buka and they got Onyemata that could be sticking in the NFL for a while. And the questionable Canadian talent is, you know, it could be a big Achilles heel for this team again next year. So the Rough Riders might be in tough for Canadian depth.
Yeah, exactly. And my question is, like, yeah, these picks could be massive hits, but who's to say Jones is still there? If this team continues to not be very good, if they finish 5-13 and 6-12 and then 4-14, Chris Jones, for all the hype, he's going to get fired. They're not going to sit there and let losing season after losing season happen simply because, well, he, look what he did in Edmonton. That's going to wear off sooner rather than later. So if this team is not good enough, and with a severe lack of Canadian talent, they might not be good enough. If they continue to falter and finish out of the playoffs in the West, Chris Jones is not going to be there to see a guy like David Onyemata even wear Ryder. It's a very interesting draft strategy that will either pay off big in the long run or possibly lead to Chris Jones not coaching the Rough Riders sooner than later.
Yeah, you know, like if there was three seasons of losing football in Saskatchewan, they're not going to – I mean, he's going to be gone. You know, one season, yeah, two seasons maybe. But if it goes on for a long period of time, and we've seen it before, if you draft poorly, then, you know, the repercussions can last for years. You know, look at Winnipeg. They had some bad draft classes. They didn't have good Canadian depth, and they're just maybe starting to turn it around. You know, we have no idea. They could be terrible this year. I mean, I predicted them to be first, so they probably will be terrible. But you see that if you draft poorly, your team can be not good for many years. So it's very important.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, barely getting a chance to breathe, the draft happens, and then 2 days later, we get the equally as interesting and probably even more hyped redesigned Adidas jerseys. So, let's talk about the Ticats jersey. This should take not too long. They pretty much didn't change a damn thing.
No, they look, you said, pretty much the same. I didn't want to see any drastic changes to the Ticats uniform. I think that it's, you know, it's classic. You know, what else can you really do with black and gold? Just, or black and yellow? You can just, they did a couple changes. I remember back in the 90s, they changed the logo a bit and they've done some tweaks here and there, but I'm glad that it's staying pretty much the same as it was in the last couple of years. So I think there's a little bit of change with maybe some of the outlining on the numbers or something to that effect. But other than that, you know, keep it the same, keep it classic. I'm happy with it.
I'm with you. Absolutely with you. I know it's not going to lead to massive New Jersey sales because the changes were so minor that unless you were looking at them side by side, you probably couldn't pick out any of the major changes that they made to the jerseys because there weren't any. The sleeves are a bit different. The lettering, the Tiger Cats and the Hamilton on the front of the jerseys are a little larger. But yeah, it's pretty much the exact same as we saw since the redesigns in 2012. And I'm okay with that, simply because I don't think leagues and teams should be changing jerseys all that often. Like you said, the Ticats jersey is kind of, there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do to make it that much different. So I say stick with what you got. It's considered one of the better jerseys in the league by partial and impartial people alike. So there wasn't much really to change. The big changes league-wide, obviously, were in BC and Winnipeg. And I think the Winnipeg designs have been almost universally accepted as great. The BC ones less so. What are your thoughts on BC's changes? Because this has been really controversial. You either love them or hate them.
I love them. I think they look sharp. I think they look great. The white ones, I was like, yeah, I don't know. But I've kind of grown to like those as well. I think they both look really good, and I think it was a nice change for the team. I didn't like the all-orange jersey, you know, all-orange home jersey. Is just, you know, there wasn't much to it. It was just really ordinary and plain, and these new black and orange home jerseys are going to look spectacular on the field, I think. And like you said about the Bombers, it's great to see them back in their old royal blue jerseys. And, you know, no one, you know, the fans have been clamoring for years and years to bring them back, and I'm glad they got what they wanted. So, what do you think about the BC jerseys? I'm not sure what your opinion is on them.
It's weird. I say it's love or hate. I can't really decide. There's something about it that I do like, but there's also something that I find really unappealing to the eye, and I think it might be the solid black numbers and lettering. There's something about that I don't like. I feel like maybe if there was some white accentuation there somewhere, or I don't know, there's something about it that I look at it and go, yeah, it's not bad, but at the same time, there's something I don't like, and I think it's that. And I'm a little kind of uncertain about the new helmet logo. It looks kind of cool, but at the same time, looks a little understated. I don't know. I don't want to say that I hate BC's jerseys, but I can't say that I love them. I do like the white and orange away uniform. I think that does look pretty sharp. But yeah, the black lettering on the orange, I don't know. There's something about it that just doesn't spark me as much as I thought it would.
Yeah, I think I like the new BC helmets. I think they're pretty sharp. You know, it's a pretty big change from what they've been going with for years. But I don't know. I just, something about it just looks really good. It kind of reminds me of the Stampeders helmets that they wore, with the third jerseys or whatever.
Oh, the signature uniforms?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like it, and I think it's just going to look really good on the field, and I think it's a big improvement to what they had last year and the years before. So, you know, to each his own. People are going to – I've seen BC Lion fans on Twitter saying they absolutely hate them, and I've seen them on Twitter say they love them. So it's going to be – I think they'll sell a lot of those jerseys, though. I do believe, like, they sold a lot of the gun
– Oh, the gunmetal gray? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they'll do well in the jersey sales for the BC Lions.
Yeah, I think you're right there as well. What about Saskatchewan's all-pickle look? The all-greens, to me, I like what they did mostly with Saskatchewan's uniform, with getting rid of the black and it just being a white letter on a green uniform. I thought that looked really sharp. But they cannot go out there week in, week out, dressed head to toe in green. They look like giant pickles.
Yeah, leading up to the unveiling, there were rumors out there that it was going to be all green, the pickle look, but I don't think it looks as bad as we were anticipating. You know, there's only minor changes to the jersey, but I think it looks pretty sharp. Even the logo, it was so, you know, you looked at it and you're like, well, they didn't really change anything, but it looks pretty sharp on the jerseys and on the helmets. So, yeah, you know, the all pickle look is whatever. I don't really hate it. I don't really love it. I'm just kind of indifferent to it, you know?
I guess. Are we done with the fashion show?
I've been clamoring a lot about taking the black out of the Stampeders uniform, and they still like that. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I guess they weren't worried about having a team called the Red Blacks and having two teams that actually wear red and black. So, you know, they can do what they want. I'm kind of mad at them, but whatever.
I did like they changed the numbers to the I think they're called Outlaw numbers from their signature jersey. I think that makes them stand out a little bit more. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
And there was kind of much ado about nothing about Montreal. Everyone, SJ Green came out when he first saw the uniforms and said he hated them and it would be embarrassed to wear them and all this other sorts of stuff. There's been kind of two schools of thought here. One, he just hates the uniforms that the Owls have been wearing since he's been in the league, or that there were big changes that they were going to make and that his comments maybe scuttled that. I'm not sure if one receiver for one team could really make that massive a change, especially when it was so late in the process. But everyone thought
Montreal's conspiracy theory.
It does make for a good conspiracy theory. But yeah, everyone thought Montreal's jerseys would be the drastic changes. I think out of all the teams, they made the least changes. I'm not even sure if they made any.
Yeah, it was kind of odd. You know, you see the tweet saying he hates them, and then when they're released, he's like, yeah, I can't wait to put these on. So it's kind of contradictory, but they didn't really do anything. So they're kind of in similar veins to Hamilton and Edmonton. Yeah, pretty much the same. I've never been a huge fan of the Alouettes jerseys, I still won't be going forward because they're pretty much the exact same.
Yeah, there's something about them that kind of stands out as different from the rest of the league, which is nice. But at the same time, there's something about them that I don't really care that much for. But yeah, we didn't see a bunch of wholesale changes in the uniforms. And personally, I'm okay with that. Fans want to go out and buy new jerseys, I fully support that. I don't have to now, which is nice. It's extra couple hundred bucks in my wallet that can go towards something else. But I think kudos to the teams for not going, oh, we get a new jersey supplier, therefore we get to make all these massive changes. I think the teams that did make changes made changes for good reasons, and I think the teams that didn't for good reasons, and I think everyone kind of comes out a winner here.
Yeah, let's just hope that these uniforms stay for, you know, I don't want to see it changing up in another 2-3 years. Let's just stick with these for, you know, a long period of time and, you know, get them established, get them recognized. I know a lot of them are pretty much the same, but there's a couple that are, you know, took pretty big changes. So let's just keep these uniforms going for, you know, around, you know, 10 years or more.
I agree. So Fashion Week with Mike and Josh is over. We can get back into some football talk. And this mostly will revolve around the Montreal Alouettes, Mike. They've made some QB moves here. They sent a first-round pick to the BC Lions for highly touted quarterback prospect from Oregon, Vernon Adams. Your thoughts on this deal?
Well, it's one of the more interesting trades that we've seen in a long time in the CFL. They trade a first-round pick for a guy that hasn't played a down in this league. So you got to question that. You got to think, you know, you got to scratch your head a little bit. You know, Jim Pop, what are you thinking? You have so many QBs already coming into camp. And, yeah, this guy has... He looked impressive in college, and his talents might, you know, he might excel in the CFL with the different rules and the way that he plays. He's a scrambler. He makes plays on the go and all that stuff, kind of similar to what Rakeem Cato can bring to the table. But yeah, it's a big, bold move by Jim Pop, and it better work out for him down the road, because I think that his leash is getting a little shorter and shorter every year. He's had a long leash for a long time, but if he can't bring some success back to the Alouettes, then I think that it might be coming to an end in the next year or two for Jim Pop.
This is a boom or bust. I know I've said this a few times in today's show, but it's a boom or bust trade for Montreal. If Adams becomes the long-term starter, the heir to Anthony Calvillo that they're looking for, then trading a first-round pick to get him is worth it, in my opinion. The problem is, in the interim, people seem to think that Montreal is going to be really bad, so it's entirely possible that the BC Lions have just traded for the first overall pick in next year's draft. And I'm not super high on the Lions this season. Yeah. I think they're going to take a step back before they take a step forward. But for the sake of argument, let's say Montreal finishes as the worst team, BC as the second worst, the Lions have the first two picks in the draft. You can really turn your team around quickly with that move. Mm-hmm. And trading a quarterback like Adams, if John Jennings is the guy that a lot of people think he is, then losing out on Adams is no big deal, because they have their young future star already in place. They don't need another one. He would just be a guy that would sit around on the sidelines not getting any playing time. Now, if Jennings doesn't pan out, the Lions still have Travis Lule, and we've seen Wally Buono over his 2+ decades as a head coach in this league find quarterback talent. He brought in Doug Flutie to Calgary, not into the league. He was brought in with BC, but Jeff Garcia, Dave Dickinson, Henry Burris, Bo Levi Mitchell, Drew Tate, the list goes on and on. Or not Bo, I'm sorry, I've seen Calgary. Travis Lule, John Jennings. Like, the list goes on and on of guys that he has brought into the league.
You know, Casey Printers for a short amount of time, but when he was really good, I mean, he was really good. I remember that one year.
He was MOP.
He was MOP. He was, you know, I looked forward to watching the BC games because Casey Printers was playing, and he was the next guy in the CFL to me. He was a rising star. He was going to be, you know, that big name for years to come in the CFL. If it didn't, you know, he went down to the NFL and then he came back and it didn't work out. But for a period of time, he was the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Buono knows how to find quarterbacking talent. So as long as he's there, I don't think they lose anything by getting rid of a young guy. They'll just replace him with another young guy that they'll put on the negotiation list. You know what I mean? So this, to them, I don't think this in any way, with the exception of if Vernon Adams turns into a star and Jonathan Jennings fades off, it's maybe sets the BC Lions back a couple of years with their quarterback. But other than that, I don't really see this as, I think this is a win, quote unquote, in a trade for the Lions.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. And, you know, it seems that the Alouettes are just keep reaching, keep trying to find that next quarterback. And, you know, you got to do that. Having a quarterback in the CFL is probably the most important piece. But, you know, you thought it was Crompton. You thought it was Cato. You thought it was Troy Smith. Now you think it might be Vernon Adams down the road. I know they're Kevin Glenn's probably going to be the starter this year. But, you know, it could pay off huge for them, or it could be a huge bust. We've seen quarterbacks with a lot of hype come out of college, come up here and just not be able to play. Just can't compete up here. So he could be another guy like that, or, you know, he could be the next great quarterback. Who knows? But it's a big risk on his part, and losing that first round pick is tough, I think.
It could hurt them in the short term, could benefit them in the long term. Again, it's hard to judge these things until we see the player play and what the pick entails. So
I know there's a lot of people, you know, saying that Montreal is going to be one of the worst teams in the league next year, but I don't know why. I just don't see that happening. I think they could be a pretty good team, actually. So, and it contradicts myself and the predictions that we made you know, in the last episode, I said they'd finish last in the East. But I just see that the offense could be a lot better this year, and the defense is still strong. So the only downside to their team, in my opinion, or one of the downsides, is the coaching. So that could be their big, you know, hindrance this year, is the coaching, maybe not the players on the field. So, you know, I can convince myself that this could be, Montreal could be a very strong team this year.
Yeah, and I think it's coaching coupled with, they seem to be in a bit of a salary cap issue. There's talk that going into camp, they're going to be cutting a bunch of veteran players because they simply can't afford them. So we could see some talent exit there. Their offense does look really strong. Their receiving core looks really good. Glenn can provide some stability back there. We know that he is, at worst, he's a 500 quarterback. He's a guy that'll keep you in games and can win you some games. As we saw in Calgary, he could be much more than that. If the talent's around him, that team could thrive. But yeah, I think the big demerit on their part is Jim Popp is just not a good head coach. Mm-hmm. And as good as a GM as he's been equally as bad when he's taken the reins as head coach. I just don't see that working out, regardless of the talent on the field, because if the head coaching is not strong, then the team, there's going to be something there that is missing.
Yeah, and then you got the Calvillo. Is he the offensive coordinator this year?
He is indeed.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the greatest players of all time in the CFL doesn't always equate to a great coach. So, you know, he's had his struggles early on in his coaching career, and, you know, we're going to see with, you know, a steady quarterback like Glenn and the talent around him, pretty good offensive line. We're going to see if Calvillo can call the plays to really make this Alouette offense tick.
Well, and we also got to think of the rest of the East. Toronto is better. Ottawa is, they were great last year. Can they keep it up this year? And Hamilton, we know from the last 3 years, they're going to be in the mix. So it's not just Montreal not being good. It's that the teams in the East are, this is probably the most, like,
competitive.
Excellent word. Thank you very much. And a brain fart. Yeah, this is the most competitive we've seen in the East Division in some times. All three Eastern playoff teams last year won 10 or more games. That had never happened before in the history of the East Division. Never had all three playoff teams been above 500. So the Argos just got better. The Ticats would have won more than 10 games. Oh, bless you.
Yes, thank you.
The Ticats would have won more than 10 games had Calero stayed healthy. Ottawa may have not won 12 if Zach's with the Ticats, but they still were going to win 9, 10 games. Like, these teams are all fairly decent. I still think Ottawa's going to take a step back, but at the same time, they're probably better than Montreal. So I think a lot of people downplaying what the Owls could accomplish has to do with their confidence in the other three teams in the East, maybe equally as much as they don't trust Pop and him to get it done in Montreal.
You know, just talking about it makes me excited for the season to start. We're so close.
We are so close. Like, I can't believe how close we are. It seems like only yesterday we were signing off for the year, talking about Edmonton winning the Grey Cup, and we're basically on the eve of training camp, and preseason games are going to be here before you realize it. And
I think a lot of the rookies report today to...
Yeah, they record this on Wednesday. I think you're right. I think rookie camp opened today, so...
The Ticats aren't doing the rookie camp because they did that camp in April, I believe.
Yeah, the mini camp thing.
Yeah, but a lot of the other teams, I believe the rookies report today. So, you know, it's started already.
Yeah, and main camp opens on the 29th, and that it's we have pretty much gotten, actually we have made that we are now with CFL football until the end of November. There's not a week that'll go by where we can't talk ball.
Now, are you gonna be attending? We're kind of, you know, spitballing here. Are you gonna be at the BMO Field the first game of the season?
I'm hoping so. Tickets haven't gone on sale yet, and
June 1st, I think.
Yeah, and there hasn't really been any Grey Cup tickets haven't even gone on sale yet, so I don't even know what the hell's going on with that. So I'm hoping so. I think that the plan is for the crew to get together and head down to BMO for that game. I think even I'm going to convince my dad and my brother to go. They're new season ticket holders this year, so talking them into heading down to BMO for the Thursday night game. Maybe we'll take the train. I don't know. My friend isn't a big drinker, so he usually just drives us and abstains from ripping her up at the game. So I think the plan is to go there. So, you know, anything can change, but I unless something drastic happens, I think we'll be there on the 23rd to cheer on the Ticats to victory.
I'm just excited to watch it on TV, you know, just to see that, you know,
what that atmosphere will be.
It's gonna be great. And I got I got that Saturday booked off for the first game in Edmonton, so I'll be at the Asks Red Blacks Grey Cup rematch, so I'm pumped for that. You know, opening weekend's going to be great. I'm just really pumped for the whole thing.
And I'm looking forward to Chad Owens catching that winning touchdown and sticking it to the Argos.
Yeah, exactly.
So one last thing, news-wise. You kind of talked about Rakeem Cato. It seems like he's not long for the Alouettes. There's talk of maybe them trying to trade him. If they can't trade him, they're probably going to cut him. If they cut him, he can't find his passport, so there's some uncertainty as to whether he'll actually be able to come up and play for a team. Let's work on the assumption that Cato is out of Montreal. Where do you think he might land?
You know, I saw something on Twitter, a Three Down Nation piece. I think that they said, the Esk's a possible landing spot. Ottawa, I think they said in there. I'm not sure. But, I could see maybe, who's the backup in Toronto? Maybe Toronto scoops him up.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because there were two teams that, I think in the piece that that John Hodge wrote for Three Down Nation, I think it was Edmonton, Saskatchewan, and Ottawa.
Yeah.
I am, I'm going to throw two teams out there that are possible landing spots. Not sure necessarily, but I look at Toronto, absolutely. Their backup is Adrian McPherson.
Oh, right, yes.
And then they have, I think it's Logan Kilgore is their third stringer, their young guy that they're going to try to develop, a la Zach Caleros and Trevor Harris. What about Hamilton? What about him? Here's the thing. Zach Caleros is a free agent at the end of this year. There's no guarantee he's going to, A, come back, or B, come back as the same player he was before he got hurt last year. Yeah. I know the team has all the confidence in the world, and I do as well, and I'm sure you do, and I'm sure Ticat fans out there all have the utmost respect and the utmost confidence that Claros will come back and be the player he was. But if he's not, would they be so crazy as to take a chance on bringing Cato in? We saw what he could do in Montreal with an even more talented team in the Ticats. I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to happen. In fact, I think it's highly unlikely to happen. But I don't think it's a crazy notion that maybe the Ticats go after Cato.
Yeah, and I think it'd be a good career move for Cato to either go to Hamilton or Toronto. You know, you got Austin, former quarterback. Milanovic, former quarterback. Milanovic has developed, we've seen it over the years that he's been in Toronto, he's developed quarterbacks that can start in this league. So I think it'd be a benefit for Cato to either go to Toronto or Hamilton. And, Edmonton as well, Jason Moss, former quarterback. So, but yeah, I think the ideal situation for him would be in Toronto. I'd like to see what Milanovic could do with this kid, really shape him into a bona fide starter in the CFL.
I actually think Toronto, again, we keep talking about the goddamn Argonauts, but I think Toronto makes a ton of sense too. You have McPherson, who's 33, 34. He's not young by any stretch of imagination. He's not the quarterback of the future in Toronto. You have Ricky Ray coming off a couple seasons of injuries hurting his career, and he's getting up there, 36, 37 years old. He's not going to play forever.
Yeah.
Cato's like 24? Mm-hmm. Bring him in, groom him. Milanovic knows how to coach quarterbacks. I think it makes the most sense. I think Saskatchewan is the team that might be most interested in him. Again, they have an aging quarterback coming off even worse injuries than Ricky Ray. What was it, a knee injury in 14 and then the torn Achilles at halftime of the first game in 2015 that Darian Durant suffered. So they're probably, and they had him on their neg list, and there's all that kerfuffle about how he wanted to come but then asked for too much and then got off the neg list and immediately signed with Montreal. It was a big to-do last offseason, if you remember. Yep. So Saskatchewan makes a lot of sense for Cato. But yeah, Toronto, I think, might be the best situation for him to prolong his career and become that 10-year superstar Canadian quarterback.
And, you look at the ages of the starting quarterbacks in the league. Obviously Burris is the oldest, but then you got Trevor Harris behind him, and he's the next guy coming up in Ottawa. So I think his best bet for, Ricky Ray could play another 3 years, possibly 4 years, maybe. That's getting up there. But I think that'd be his best bet, to sit behind Ricky Ray, learn from Ray, learn from Milanovic. I think it's a good thing for him to sign with Toronto and bide your time, be patient. And maybe one day he could be making those big, big dollars as a starter in the CFL.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. It's definitely something that we're going to monitor and pay attention to as we head towards the start of the season. Yeah. Are you ready for some questions? It's been a while since we've done this.
Let's do some questions.
All right, so let's start with, we got some questions from Joe on Twitter a few weeks ago that I decided, that's USFL Tecmo. He has his own podcast, Rouge, White, and Blue. I was on it recently. We had a great discussion, just chatting ball. It's a good show. You should definitely go ahead and listen to it. He gave us a couple questions a couple weeks ago that I decided to hold on to because I thought they would lead to some great discussion. His first one is simply, which team has the best QB situation going into the season? Your thoughts?
Let me think about this for a second here. You know, I like Calgary's situation. They got Beauvillier, Mitchell, and then Drew Tate behind him, who is a little strange at times, but can get it done on the field. I think he's a really good backup quarterback, and I thought at one time he could have been a really good starting quarterback. So I like Calgary's situation. You know, I like Hamilton's situation. When Claros comes back, I think Jeremiah Mazzoli is a good talent. I think that he can fill in when Claros is out, so I think he's a solid backup. Montreal, you know, there's got a lot of talent there.
Well,
you know,
they have the most quarterbacks, so that's got to count for something, right?
Yeah. So they got Glenn, and they got Cato, and they got Crompton, and they got, you know, Elon Green, and Ricky Foggy, and you know, all those
Reggie
guys.
Reggie Slack, Tracy Hamm.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, those are a couple teams that stand out. You know, Toronto has a decent situation with you know, McPherson. There's a lot of high expectations for him early on in his career, but I think he could be a solid backup to Ricky Ray. Yeah, those are some of the teams that I think, you know, there's three or four teams that I think have solid QB depth.
Yeah, so I think it's Edmonton, honestly. Yeah. I think Mike Riley is excellent. I think we saw what James Franklin is capable of. I think he was really good as a rookie last year. His only start wasn't that great, but he came in situations and really showed that he could be a future starter in this league.
He had a game that I went to last year. He had a great game against Toronto.
Yeah, so he's a guy that I think he's got a year more of experience. Riley's obviously the guy there, so again, he can continue to develop. I think I like that situation. If Riley gets hurt, I don't think they miss too much from a playing standpoint with Franklin. Obviously, the leadership qualities that Riley brings is incalculable, so there's nothing there. Calgary's, like you said, theirs isn't bad either. That Mitchell, Tate, 1-2 punches. Is pretty potent. Tate was a few years ago considered a star. Like I think it was 2012 after they got rid of Burris. It was supposed to be Tate's team. His big thing is he can't stay healthy, and it allowed for Kevin Glenn to resurrect his career in Calgary. And then we saw the ascension of Beauvillier Mitchell and all that sorts of stuff. But I still think if pushed into action, Tate can be really, really good. If Jonathan Jennings works out, BC's 1-2 punch is not bad. Lule as a backup. We're talking about a former MOP, a former Grey Cup MVP, and a guy who's still not that old. Injuries have hurt him more than anything else. If he's the wizened old man on the bench who needs to come off when either Jennings isn't playing well, or Jennings gets hurt, I don't think BC will miss a whole lot. I think a lot of people would say Ottawa, and I know the Ottawa fans out there are probably wondering why we're not talking about Burris and Harris and how that has to be the best. Those were the two best quarterbacks throughout the season last year and all the other sorts of stuff. And they're going to hate me because they've been hating me all offseason because I haven't, you know, worshipped at the throne of the Red Blacks. I think that's a powder keg just waiting to explode. I think both those quarterbacks are good, don't get me wrong, but the second that Burris has that 3-interception first half and he's back to his pouty, whiny, bad Hank self, fans are going to be calling for Trevor Harris, and that's just going to sink Burris further and further. Burris, if he's not the man, the unquestioned starter, does not play very well. Look at his last season in Calgary in 2011. He was yanked and replaced by Drew Tate because he just wasn't doing it well enough. Fast forward to 2013 with the Ticats when he wasn't getting it done, and then Austin installed those packages with first it was Dan Lefevre, then it was Jeremiah Mazzoli, and then it was all three of them. Burris' numbers weren't that great. His production wasn't that great. If he's not the guy, then I think he tends to get a little pouty. And Trevor Harris is the QB in waiting. He's proven he can start in this league. I don't know if that situation, as talented as both those guys are, I don't know if it's going to work out.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, Ottawa fans are notorious for loving the backup quarterback, calling for the backup quarterback during games, you know, giving the starting quarterback a tough time when he's not doing so well. So Burris doesn't handle that very well. It could get very interesting very quick if Burris falters and the fans get on him, because you know, Harris is there and he's ready to take over at any moment. So we're going to see this year if this extra, you know, this guy behind him really motivates Burris, or, you know, really bothers him and his game drops down to a bad Hank level.
Yeah, I think anyone expecting Burris to replicate what he did last year is living in a dream. That was, you're not going to see him come out and do what he did last year a second year in a row. At this stage of his career, he simply not going to do it. I think the loss of Jason, and we've touched on this a lot over the offseason. The loss of Jason Moss is really going to hurt that Ottawa offense. I think anyone saying that those four Ottawa receivers are all going to go over 1,000 yards again is, again, dreaming. That's happened so rarely that to expect it in back-to-back years, even though all four of those receivers are very good, I think you're going to see some drop-offs there. You're probably going to see other people get involved. I just don't think that Burris is going to do what he did in 2015, again in 2016. And we've seen Burris played lights out last year and didn't really have that many bad games. But the first time he does, especially in front of that home crowd, they were calling 2 years ago when Burris wasn't playing very well and the team was terrible, they were calling for the backup then, and it was Thomas DeMarco, who's not very good. So they want Trevor, like you look at Trevor Harris, they're going to be enamored by what he did with the Argos last year. And the second Burris starts to, you know, throw those short passes or miss open receivers or throw some interceptions or fumble the ball, you're going to hear the boos rain down, you're going to hear the calls for Harris, and that's going to get to him. And I just don't think that this, in the long run, for this season, is going to work out.
Yeah, it's we're gonna find out real soon, because the season starts very shortly. So, you know, there's a lot of teams I think that you could look at and be like, well, their QB situation is pretty good. You know, there's a couple of backup guys that could be starting in this league if there was one or two more teams. So, you know, there's been questions over the years about the status of the CFL quarterbacks and how good they are, but I think we're at a pretty good situation right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. So let's move on to Joe's next question, which is, which team has the best Canadian talent?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I think we can all agree Saskatchewan's is the worst, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've improved in the offseason, but I think it still has a ways to go. I think that Hamilton's depth is really good at Canadian, you know, in the non-import position that we used to call it. You know, they've built up a lot of talent over the years. Austin has really built up this team to have a ton of Canadian depth. So I really like the Ticats. I'm sure there's some other teams out there. What are a couple, you know, you've seen some, you know, Canadian depth charts out there that people have been putting out on Twitter that are really, really cool to see and really interesting to see. I think Winnipeg has done a really good job over the years building themselves up from what the former GM did to their team. And I think they're really starting to get back on track with that Canadian depth. So there's a couple teams out there that have a really strong depth at that those positions.
Yeah, let's look at some of the best teams in the league. Hamilton's, I think, is really good. Winnipeg's is the best it's been in the last probably 5 to 7 to 10 years.
Calgary's
is really good. I think what Winnipeg's done, especially over the last couple of seasons, mm-hmm. with Kyle Walters in charge there, they have built that Canadian depth up to be really, really good. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the reasons they take a big leap this year and make the playoffs.
First in the West.
Yeah, I know you're saying first in the West. Well, we'll see about that. Canadian depth and quarterback play are the two biggest things that contribute to success in the CFL. And if Winnipeg can get quality quarterback play out of Drew Willie for a full season, and their Canadian talent is as good as I think it is, there's a team. That's why you look at a team and go, they can go from 6-12 to 10-8 and make the playoffs. Toronto's isn't that bad either. They brought in some Canadian guys in the offseason, most notably, in our case, Brian Baalke. They have Ricky Foley, who I'm not a huge fan of, but he continues to contribute. If Andre Dury's healthy, that's a good get for them. They brought in Josh Bork. They're going pretty much all Canadian on that offensive line, which means you don't have to go Canadian elsewhere. Talking about the Argos.
Yeah.
I really like the way they built their squad.
Yeah, Anthony Coombs is another guy that's a pretty dangerous weapon.
Yeah, they have a lot. They just, as much as I hate saying this, I mean, I feel like I want to just stab myself in the stomach, but they just look really good from top to bottom.
Yeah, there should be a Toronto, an Argos podcast out there so we can go on each other's shows and rip into each other before Ticats come.
It'd be a lot easier if someone else was out there talking Argos football that we would have to do it. Hamilton's I like as well. I think starting-wise, I think they have the best Canadian in the league in Ted Laurent. Andy Fantuz, when healthy, I know that's a big when, it's not always often, when he's healthy, still probably the best Canadian receiver in the CFL. I don't think anyone can do what he does. Their those three offensive linemen they have are good. Courtney Stevens, a good player. Craig Butler, unfortunately, we're not going to have him this year, but he's better than decent. He's a very good player. I like Mike Daly. I like the and of course, we're more familiar with what Hamilton has. We know the special teams players' names, the backup offensive linemen, because we follow this team. So I think it just knowing more about the Ticats, I'm really confident in their Canadian talent. But I think that you mentioned Calgary. they're the reason they win all the time is because they have such good Canadian talent. I said Toronto and I said Winnipeg. Those are – it's hard to pick a best right now because I'm not as familiar with all the Canadian talent on every team. But I feel confident in kind of those four teams, Winnipeg, Toronto, Hamilton, Calgary. And I feel super confident saying Saskatchewan sucks.
Yeah, it's they weren't the best. That's the one of the big problems they had last year was not enough Canadian depth. And, you know, they suffered from the Brandon Tamman, Chamberlain years where they went for it all. And they, kudos to them, they won the Grey Cup, but now they're on a downswing because of it.
Yeah, so speaking of Canadian talent, our last question of the week is, what's up with Enoch Mwamba? Where do you think he ends up?
That's a good question. I've seen rumblings on Twitter that his agent is asking for too much. I don't know if there's any NFL opportunities out there. I doubt it because, it, you know, once you get, you know, your shots in the NFL and it doesn't work out and you come back to the CFL and it's tough to get back up, you know, back down south. So I'm not sure if he's going to land with the CFL team or not, if he's asking too much, you know, if he's putting himself out of the market because of his what he's asking for a wage. So it could be any team. Like, I have no real feelings on who's going to sign them. I haven't really heard at who's talking to him. I'm sure every team is talking to him, trying to get this guy signed up because he's a great talent, a great Canadian talent, one of the best in the league, Canadian or not. So, yeah, I just don't know. I was pretty shocked when Montreal released him. We talked about earlier, they have cap troubles. But no, but wherever he does land up, he's going to be a great addition.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that he hasn't really found a home yet. Maybe he's still looking at the NFL simply because I think he's 1 year away from getting an NFL pension. So even if he plays one season, he doesn't even play, he's just on the roster, he will get a very lucrative pension from the NFL, which will be good for his future. He's obviously going to command a high paycheck, just like we talked about last year when he was cut by the Colts. And he was going on his tour of the CFL. He's going to get a lot of money, but right now, teams are kind of tied up with the money that they have to offer. They can't really give him maybe the $250,000 contract he's looking for. Maybe he does have to lower his demands. I don't know. It's kind of weird that it's been oddly quiet on the Mwamba front, which makes me think that either we're not going to hear anything from him or something's in the works because it just seems to be too quiet. Where he ends up, though, that's as good a guess as any. I wouldn't mind seeing him in black and gold.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. You know, you talked about Charles Clay before, and you know maybe he was going to be a starter in the linebacking course, but then I believe he got released.
Yeah, he did get released just recently.
Yeah. So, and we talked about maybe Plessis coming in and starting a Canadian in one of the positions at linebacker. Well, this guy could come in. He's a Canadian. Plessis could back him up. That would be a pretty good tandem at one of the linebacker positions. So, yeah, he would command a high salary, but man, oh man, would that be quite the linebacking core with if he signed with the Ticats.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to, again, just like the Cato situation, this is going to require some monitoring over the next couple of weeks because, as we've said, the season is basically here. Camps are open across the country for rookies. Camps for every team open officially on the 29th. Football's here, Mike. Football is here. It's back. I know we've touched on it slightly a little bit during the show, but man, am I pumped. Football's back, baby.
Yeah, you can smell it in the air, you know, is there a preseason game this weekend, or no?
I know the Ticats' first preseason game is in Toronto on a Saturday, I believe it's July 11th in Toronto, and then their home preseason game is the 17th here against Ottawa. The first preseason game is Wednesday, June 8th. It's Montreal at Winnipeg. So hopefully we'll get some preseason games on TSN this year. I know there were a couple last year, but the more that we can get on there, the better. I don't think I'm going to head down to Toronto for a preseason game. I have in the past just for something to do, but I doubt that that's going to be in the cards this year, especially because I think they're going to play their preseason game at maybe they're playing it at U of T, but maybe they're playing it. I'm not sure. I haven't really they've played their preseason games at U of T the last couple of years, but that was more to do with the kerfuffle with not being able to get dates at the Rogers Center. So I don't know. I can't see myself heading down for that. Hopefully it's on TV. If not, I will probably just be listening to it on TSN 1150, listening to Marshall Ferguson and Coach Sal. Marshall Ferguson's now the new play-by-play guy for the Ticats. We didn't really talk about that much, but interesting there. So I'll definitely be listening to the game. Whether I get to watch it or not, that's up in the air.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if they do the streaming again at the home preseason game, if it's not on TSN, you know, because they did, I know you didn't see it because you were at the game, obviously, but they did a really good job last year of streaming the game.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that because you obviously weren't there, so you got to watch the stream and you said it was great. So, yeah, hopefully they do something like that again if the game's not available on TSN for everyone to watch. But hopefully they can put some preseason games on TSN or find a way to stream on YouTube or on the CFL site or something. Just the more we can get out there, the better. I like watching preseason games just because I like to see who some of these guys are. I don't get a chance to go to many training camp practices simply because of when they are in the day, but preseason gives me a chance to kind of watch these guys. And maybe I'm in the minority and not everyone wants to watch preseason football, but hey, as far as I'm concerned, football is football, and I'll watch it regardless. I watch NFL preseason games. Those are boring, too.
Yeah, well, it's you know, it's not the best football, but obviously, but you know, you get to see some of the guys that might be new starters for your team. So any chance you get to watch football, I'm all for that.
We've gone from November all the way almost through May now, and we can say that football is here, and that's like I said, that's just a good thing.
Very exciting.
All right, so that's it for this week. You can listen to the show on iTunes, download on iTunes as always, subscribe, rate, review, let us know what you like or dislike about the show. We'll try to do our best. I think we do our best, and if we suck, we suck, but I don't really get that much. I don't think I've heard anyone say we suck. I remember early on we talked about this. Have you got any you sucks from anyone out there?
No, you sucks.
No, people seem to be digging the show. Maybe it's just they want Ticat football, and I'm happy to provide some content for that.
Maybe the problem is it's you know, it's just our moms that listen to the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, your mom might. My mom hates sports, so if she's listening to the show, she must really like me. And anyway, iTunes is the place you can get it. You can get it on Podbean.com. There's a Podbean app for your mobile device. I've been told that it doesn't work necessarily. I'm going to try it myself and then come back next time and hopefully come with an update, because a friend of mine said he downloaded the app and then all that showed up was the first episode, and then none of the rest showed up, so he went back to using his old podcast app. But either way, there's a way to get the show. Please listen, rate, subscribe, comment, do whatever you need to do. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you would like to see on the show, such as questions. If you want to have your questions answered by Mike or myself, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, let them know where they can find you.
Mike_Ticats.
I'm Josh Smith_82. Again, comments, questions, future guests. No one's really posed any future guests to us. We've had a couple of good ones. We're always looking to get more. Who do you guys want to hear on the show? Who do you want us to talk to? We'll see what we can do to get them on the show. Of course, always post questions and comments in the comment section on 3 Down Nation when this show goes up. Everything, every interaction with fans we look at, we tabulate, we keep. So just if we don't respond to you doesn't mean we didn't see it. Doesn't mean we're not cognizant that it's there. We know it's there, so keep them coming. So for Podski Wee Wee this week, the number one, or what should we say, the podcast for the number one fans in the CFL? Does that sound good?
Yeah, that works, yeah.
All right, so for the podcast for the number one fans in the CFL, Podski Wee Wee, for this week, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.